Dear friends, in this weekly study of Bhagavad Gita, we have been seeing how this wonderful scripture combines the theory and practice. It presents before us the ideal and shows that how we can attain to it from where we are. It chalks out a very practical path for everyone to follow. It is therefore called Brahma Vidya and Yoga Shastra. These two Sanskrit words are very beautiful. Brahma Vidya is a mental understanding of the ideal, conviction about the nature of the ideal. And Yoga Shastra is the yoga means the practice, how to put that ideal into practice, how to make what is a theoretical understanding into a practical experience. It is like you have understood the recipe, you took a recipe book of some nice delicious thing that you like to eat and read all the recipe, but just licking the book you won't get the taste of it, you see. And then comes the practical part, how to cook it. You have read it, now get the ingredients, start cooking, and that requires a training of your nervous system, training of your hands. It is a practical training. Just by reading the book, and suddenly you will not be able to make it well the first time. You may have to do it. Certain cooking preparations are very difficult to make. No, they are not. They depend. Doesn't depend on your just knowing the recipe. You have to go through that preparation several times before you get it to perfection. So, similarly, here too, you heard about the goal. Yes, that supreme oneness, that real existence, the source of all bliss, the source of all knowledge, that is my goal. And that, remember friends, that is the goal of each of us. Is it not that that we seek in life? All of us seek to exist. Yes, I should be, I should have joy in life, and I should not live an ignorant existence. I need knowledge. So, just as when you want something in life, you go to the source of it, where you get it. If you want to say buy milk, you don't go to barber shop, you go to the source, you go to a grocery store or something where they sell it. So you go to a grocery store for buying milk. So similarly you have to know the source, where you get the ultimate bliss, ultimate understanding of everything, and also the ultimate existence. So what is that source? If you look at it, you will see that all these things are actually, really in yourself. Yourself. It appears strange because we are so much habituated to look for these things outside. But really, if one analyzes, if we look deeper, they are really within us, our very nature. See, our body changes, and therefore body comes into being and goes out of being. It is born and it dies. But I does not change with body. So, I neither am born nor am I going to die. It is the existence. It is there all the time. So my existence that I am seeking is really myself. Similarly, joy. If we see where do I experience joy, you may eat a candy and feel happy. But did you feel the joy in the candy or in yourself? The experience always tells us that the feeling of happiness you didn't get in the candy. It came from within you. The other considerations also can convince you that it is not in the candy. And if you are given 10 candies to eat, the joy doesn't become 10 times. You may eat one and say enough, two, okay, somehow you enough you will say. You don't get any joy from that anymore. It is that successively, as these things get accumulated, the joy starts decreasing. That is also a principle in economics and commerce. The law of successively those benefits start decreasing. So, diminishing what? Diminishing returns. So it is that, you know, one candy gives you something, second candy diminishes, the returns are already diminished, you see. So because it is really not there, it was coming from within, that candy only provided some kind of a signal, a symbol by which it came out. Like when you flip the switch on, then the electricity does not come through the switch as such. The switch doesn't produce any electricity. It just opens up the passage for the electricity to get it. So similarly, maybe the candy has opened up the passage for the inner joy to get in there. But it was not in the candy. So if you go on pressing the switch further up, that doesn't make the light to glow brighter, you see. It is because the switch doesn't contain any of that. It is coming from some other source. So all our joys really come from within. That is the source. Similarly about knowledge. All knowledge is really within us. The psychologist, even the modern psychology tells you that it is, learning is really taking off the cover. You take off covers gradually. The more the covers are taken off, the more inner knowledge shines forth. So, all that we seek is really within us. And now, yoga. That this we understood, now practice, so that it becomes our experience. That is, the personality gets gradually transformed. It is a process, like a journey, you know. Successively you go to different positions till you reach the destination where the journey stops, culminates. So you start going through the process. That process is yoga. Convert your understanding and gradually into practice, and that culminates in the experience. And he told that the way to do it, the first thing is try to perform your actions in a detached manner. Don't do your actions because of attractions and repulsions. Don't do your actions out of desires, but do them as duty. Acting in this way, you know, it is one and gets to the ultimate goal. That verse we were seeing, a 19th verse in the 3rd chapter. Tasmadasattah satatam karyam karma samachara asakto yacharan karma paramapnoti purushah. Therefore, always perform action which has to be done, unattached. Verily, man attains the highest by performing action unattached. So, this is the great principle. this verse, many people ask that why we are, you know, even after spending one or more, about 1.5 years in studying Bhagavad Gita, we have come only to the third chapter. Well, it is every word of it is so important, full of so much of meaning. When we read this verse, each word is there with a profound meaning that word is adding to the verse. That is why it is there. For example, see, let us see each word. Therefore. Therefore means there is a causal connection. You know, when do we use the word therefore? This is like this. Therefore you do it. There is a causal connection there. Because you want to realize the highest, therefore you do it like this. This is the idea here, that the cause has to be connected to the effect. The means are to be connected to the end. So, this is, you know that you want to realize the truth. You want to experience the truth. Therefore, for that purpose, do this. It is not something to be done for nothing, but there is a purpose behind this. That therefore, it is indicated that it indicates that there is a connection. Like when we say, therefore take the medicine. What does it mean? That because you have some ailment, to get rid of that ailment, you take this medicine. So, it is like this. The word therefore has a very important meaning here, and that must be remembered. Why should I be doing this yoga? Because I have the goal to attain. It's the means to the goal. So, remember that goal. And therefore, for that, what is the means? Asaktah satatam. Always perform action which has to be done. The action which has to be done. In short, we call it duty. What is my duty? The action has to be done. It is not taken up out of liking. It has not been taken out of some attraction or habit. But because it needs to be done, it is my duty. Like if you are an employee somewhere, you have to report to your work. Say somebody is a school teacher, has to report to the work at 8 in the morning. So, whether likes or doesn't like, has to finish all the morning duties and all, and rush to the work at 8, has to be done. Whether you like or whether you don't like, that is not the consideration. You have not taken up that work out of liking as such, but because you need to do it. And therefore, one lady was so happy that day there was an off. Suddenly she got an off, you know. There was snow or something. And so she didn't have to go to work. So she was feeling very happy. Because it is duty, you know. You are doing it because you have to do it. You have not taken it as a matter of, your desires. But it is something that you are doing because you need to do it. It is duty. So something, do the work as if you have to do it. This is where we have to compare. How many things we really do because we have to do? Most of the things we do because I like to do. Because I get pleasure out of it. Getting pleasure out of it and therefore doing it. No, that it is creating a bondage around you. doing something, seeking a pleasure out of it. Why it becomes bondage? Because you are going in the opposite direction. Pleasure is within you and you are trying to get it from something out, and thus it becomes a bondage. So doing things because I love them, because I like them, because of so many other things, because of attachment, we do it. And many times in our life, we just change the name. Something we do out of this attraction, out of attachment, and start calling it as my duty, because we don't want to give it up. We don't want to get away from it. We are just caught in that bondage, and we give it a nice name. Human beings, their intelligence sometimes works against them. Not sometimes, more often than not, we use our intelligence against our benefit. That instead of understanding that this is a bondage, I give it a name. This is my duty. This is my love. This is my so and so. So, instead of trying to free oneself from it, we get more and more entangled into it, and thus go away from this yoga. We had discussed this idea earlier, that these two similar sounding words, yoga and bhoga. Bhoga means that becomes a part of your karma that you have to suffer for. That is called bhoga. If you do the work as yoga, that frees you. Otherwise it becomes bhoga, means you have to suffer for that. It becomes your bondage. Every work that is not done as yoga, what it does is, it is never finished. That work which is done as not yoga, it is never finished. Just as if you are doing work in a wrong way, it doesn't get finished, you know. Like a person was trying to clean the hall. So took a broom and started brooming. But the fellow didn't do it systematically. So the dust would get accumulated in one room, then he would just walk on that and start doing some. So it again would get spread everywhere. The room could never be gotten clean, because the work was not being done systematically. If the work is not being done systematically, it doesn't get finished. So when we are working in the wrong fashion, out of greed, out of attachment, out of desires, what happens? Well, the work doesn't get finished. It goes on and on. How it happens? You see, when you perform a work out of attachment, yes, I like to do this. Simple thing, say, I like to listen to this music. And we all like, you know. But see what the effect of it is. It is done out of attraction, out of a desire. Now, what happens? It is heard. You feel it is gone. No, it has left the seeds. Like you have a plant, it grows, it has a fruit, then there is a seed. Then it leaves the seeds there. And what is a seed? Seed has the propensity, not just potential, but propensity to again manifest in the same tree. So, and one tree doesn't yield just one seed. Otherwise, nobody would go in farming, you see. If just one plant gives only one seed, then no point in farming. Nobody would have done that business. one plant gives rise to several seeds, hundreds of them, and thus you are stuck with hundreds of plants of the same type. And thus that is how the habits get formed. Now you don't find a way to get out of it. First it is done consciously that yes, I want to hear this music. It's so nice, very good. Yes, it is all so nice and all that. Now what happens? Now you get caught into it. Now after a while, that forces you. Now you have no way out. Now you cannot escape it. You have to, like a slave, follow it. That is the force of habit. People getting caught into habit, addictions. How do they get? One gets into that. It is initially it is done consciously, but then you are forced to do it. So this bhoga happens like this. You are caught in the net, and therefore the way out, yes. And start when we know that this is not right, just start in the right manner. It is starting in the right manner is simple. Do your duty. Don't do something because of attractions and repulsions. Do not act in that manner. Do your duty. What you need to do. Like you need to take food for maintenance of your body, you need to take food. Just as you have to maintain your car, when you have to run the car, you need to put gas, you need to lubricate it, and so forth. You have to take proper care of it. So similarly, this is a vehicle, and you have to take proper care of it. So you eat according to what is needed for it. You don't eat because of the desires, just as you don't put gas in the car just because of the out of desire, let it overflow. About food, we see it is too much is eaten, not because of need, but more because of greed. So it is, then it works against us. Because we are eating, not because it is needed to be eaten, but because I love it. So, that is how it creates a big bondage gradually. So, according to what, Triveni? According to need. Do the work if it is needed. Don't have to do everything in the world. Do the work that is needed, and that too without being attached. Don't get caught into it. Feel that you are that doing is only your part. Other things you don't have any claim on anything because you have done that work. It is you only doing is your part in that. So that is the meaning of being working in a detached manner. Again, next word is also very important. Satatam, that is always. Not for 5 minutes a day or 1 hour a day. 1 hour a day I will do in a detached manner, and remaining 23 hours I will do in attached way, according to my desires, likes and dislikes. Well, it is like going one step forward and 23 steps backwards. See how much you will progress like that in your journey. So always, all the time, we have to train ourselves, you know. We can begin with 1 hour maybe, but then next day we can add 1 more hour to it. Next day we can, like that, we can, all 24 hours a day, we will be doing works in a detached manner. because the work needs to be done. And next word, very important again, it is samachara, that is it is not actually translated here, but it is an important word. This is an action to be performed nicely. That is, the work has to be performed fully, completely, very nicely, with full attention. Sometimes the idea that I am working in a detached manner, working in a detached way, sometimes one feels, then I will not have my soul in it, then I will not work properly. How can I take care of these works if I am not doing it out of liking and attraction? It is only because I am attached, I put all my soul into it. If I am to remain detached and free from desires, attractions and repulsions, then what will motivate me to do the work? What will be the intensity, that incentive to do it? Well, that is the practice of yoga again. Initially one does feel like that out of habit, but gradually one can understand that perfection in work doesn't come because of attachment. Perfection in work neither comes because of attraction to it. Perfection comes because we put our whole attention into it. So, the concentration of mind, that is an important aspect of yoga. Do your work very nicely. I have learned this lesson, friends, by experiencing it. This question, when it is asked, is very familiar to me because it used to be my question too, that how can one do work if it is to be done in a detached way, and what will prompt me to do it? What will inspire me or pull me to do it? And then if I am not doing it in that way, then I will be doing it shabbily without my mind in it. Friends, that is not true. Initially it may happen, but when our goal is clear, that yes, I have to practice this for my spiritual progress, for my ultimate attainment of goal, then you will see that that itself becomes a great incentive. And thus you will see that the work is done perfectly. I saw many people who, out of complete detachment, without any attraction or repulsion about it, doing work with tremendous perfection. It is, I saw one Swami, he was keeping accounts, and those were not the days of computers, everything has to be written by hands. And his, very tidily everything was written, very neatly and very correctly. He used to add up, add, subtract, match, that balances and everything so quickly, so perfectly, and with a smile on the face all the time. So it is many other works also done very well, very beautifully, without any turmoil in the mind. It is... That is how the perfection in the work also is seen there. See, Swami Vivekananda, I am taking a big example, of course, but see the quality of his lectures. It is not just scholarship, but the oratory, the content, the psychological stimulus that these lectures give to people, all these lectures given, each lecture is an example of perfection. And yet all that work is done in a detached way, that I have nothing to gain out of it and nothing to lose. It is the divine, the God, who is getting it done. I am just a machine. I am the machine of God. Instead of being the machine of our passions and desires, how nice it is to become machine of divine. So that was his attitude. So the work is getting done perfectly. See the letters he has written. It is more than 1,000 page books in about 7-8 years or 10 years time. He wrote all those letters, and we really don't have all those letters. Most of those letters have been destroyed or gone somewhere because those to whom they had been sent, they did not preserve or did not give it for publication. So that more than 1,000 page volume of his letters, while doing all these other works, he wrote those letters, and again each written letter also is an exemplification of wonderful literature. See, the placement of each word is again perfection. Now, look at our own experience. When I am speaking to you, many times I have to take my word back. I have to say, what I mean to say, even in this, I cannot give a good talk in this way, even after studying. And Vivekananda, detached. It is, and he was therefore called by many in United States who heard him. They called that, he is orator by divine right. It is, see, the perfection doesn't depend on the attachment to work. In fact, when one becomes detached, then one can act much better. The quality of work, friends, will improve a lot. Never think that if I am detached, then the quality of my work will suffer. No, friends, it will, if at all, it will improve. So, working in the detached way doesn't mean compromise in quality. And the work has to be done excellently. The work has to come out excellent. It is not that... I told that incident a few times here, but it is again worth pointing out. When many years back, I had used to wash my clothings, and I was not, and it is not just past tense, even now I am not very good at that. I used to wash the clothes, and when I had washed, they didn't look very different from not washed, you see. A senior Swami called me, "Hey, what is this? Were you washing these clothes in the spirit of Karma Yoga or what? Don't do that much Karma Yoga. They must become clean. Because in Karma Yoga you are taught that you work but don't aspire for results." No, he said, don't, that doesn't mean that you will wash and you don't worry whether they come out clean or not. That is not washing at all. So, washing means they must become clean. So, do your work to perfection. It has to be work done very well. Excellently work is done and flawlessly. It is wonderful to see this thing happening in the lives of so many people, that the quality of work starts improving. Anybody, I have seen hundreds of such examples, not only amongst the monks, but amongst many amongst the lay devotees, householder devotees, that wonderful transformation work being done perfectly as a part of yoga. It has to be done well, not detached means let it be done, any doesn't matter. I am unconcerned. In that sense, it is not detachment. Detachment from all the selfish ends. But the work has to be done perfectly. It brings so much illumination when one does work in that fashion. It is very nice to see how the efficiency in general increases a lot when one starts working in this spirit. Then the frittering of energy stops. Our mental wastage of energy stops, the concentration increases, and thus the work is done perfectly in minimum time, spending minimum energy. It is so beautiful to watch even such people doing work. That itself gives so much of education that yes, I also can change my life in that way. So, if you continue doing like this, the last phrase of this verse says, you will attain perfection. And this is a special feature of Vedanta. Each of us can attain perfection. In fact, for that, one has to do it in some... these things, some teachings of some religions, it is said that no, you cannot attain perfection. You have to, God is perfect, you have to be below God all the time. You can strive for perfection, but you will never attain perfection. Vedanta says, no, you are perfect, you have to manifest that perfection. All this is manifestation. Paramapnoti purushah. Each human being is called forth. That yes, you have that infinite strength in you. You have the divine in you. You have to manifest that divinity. And through this practice, this is the way. Whosoever does, gets it. Not only Jesus and Buddha became perfect. Each of us have the same capacity, the same potential to attain perfection in our lives. Let us never forget this, that yes, each of us is potentially divine, and our goal is to manifest that divinity. That is yoga, striving to manifest that potential divinity. And we see, we start seeing it coming in our own lives. Yes, gradually the life changes. So, this is the possibility of perfection is mentioned in all Vedanta texts, that you become perfect. Of course, Jesus says this, that be thou perfect as thy Father in heaven is perfect. But this teaching is not given much importance by many, that yes, be thou perfect. Yes, each of us have to become perfect. That is the purpose of religion, and manifest that perfection in each walk of life, because we are that. That perfection has to come in our day-to-day activities. It must shine forth in our every moment of life. If it is perfection, then it will shine forth. So, just as when a lamp is lit, well, the light glows around. Similarly, the inner perfection manifests through every action. Then he gives the example in the next verse that karmanaiva hi sansiddhim asthita janakadayah lokasangrahamevapi sampashyan kartumarhasi. He tells, look, in the previous those days, there were many previously known people who have attained perfection through this practice of doing action in a detached way. And one famous example was the king Janaka. We feel that, well, the hermits in a forest may be able to practice it. But those who have to do lot of work in the social structure, how can they be able to do it? It is possible if somebody goes in the forest and lives in a cave, maybe one may be able to manifest that perfection. No. Here is a great example, and many such examples you will be able to see. A king, not just a decoration king, and that in many there are democracies, but still they have kept a king as like the king of England, queen of England. There is no power there, only it is a decoration. So not king like that, really administrator. How much hard work that king has to put in. 24 hours on duty, that kind of king, through acting, through action of this work of a king, has attained to perfection. So through this, he says, through the work alone, by action alone, Janaka and others realize perfection. Remember this. And then, it is a psychologically important point, the next line of this verse, even considering the incentive to people, you should perform action. Here we have to remember that Arjuna was tempted to give up all action because of this peculiar duty of getting into this war, I am in trouble. So let me give up all action. That was what Arjuna's mind was hovering around. So even though Krishna was telling, the teacher, Lord Krishna, was giving these illuminating advices, the mind doesn't take it if there is another uppermost thought there that no, let me give it up. You know why it is, I don't... maybe some Janaka or somebody might have attained, but I may go by other way, there must be some other way, I am sure. So why not give up all the action, which is actually the most detrimental thing that one can do, give up action and be lazy. By giving up action, you don't attain to perfection, you attain to the exactly opposite thing. You become inactive, lazy, indolent, and like that. So, he didn't want Arjuna to become like this. So, Arjuna may be thinking, you know, see, I am an ordinary person. I am not thinking for now. I am not there for now. I am just thinking in terms of our ordinary thing, that high goal and all, forget about it. So Krishna tells him, look, even considering what you will do to society, you should continue to do proper action, because you are a teacher. Every person is a teacher. People are watching you, and so you must present them with proper example. That if See, all other people in the war, you are a big general in that army. So many soldiers and others, they are looking at you. What example are you setting for them? At least look at that. Maybe you have some compassion and other things coming in your heart, and so you don't want to fight and run away. What example are you setting before others? At least look at that. You may be perfect in your own way. You may think like that. Krishna is hinting that you are not, but even if we consider that you are, still look at the others. If you put a bad example before them, then they are likely to follow that. And is it going to be good for them? A person has to be also looking at one's duties to the society. And we have, as a member of this human society, we have our duties to the society too. What this example are we going to set? What kind of an ideal and what kind of a role model we are going to put before society? You know, these great celebrities, those who are in sports and become, you know, well known, they are therefore told about what they utter on the field, how they behave on the field. Why? And they may not actually be concerned with that for themselves, but they are told, look, all young people, school children, they are watching you. You are uttering all bad expletives if they are heard by a small middle school kid. Then that kid looks upon you as a role model. Team squatter back, what a high esteem that kid is holding you in. And if you behave like this, if you are known to be a drug addict and such stuff, then what example do you set before those? You are held in high esteem by others. And so at least thinking of your social duty, your social responsibility, you shouldn't behave like this. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, you are a leader of human beings, you are general of the army. So at least be mindful of that. What kind of role model are you going to present to people? Looking at that, at least you should not be shunning your duties. Actually, he will continue this advice in many different ways, that why a person should be concerned about what the impact of your actions will be on society. No man is an island, friends. Our actions affect others. Our actions affect the society in general. Each one of us is a teacher. In the sense that people look at us and they learn from us. We are sending a message from our life to everyone around. So we have a duty to perform here too. That yes, may not my actions give a bad signal, a wrong signal. In psychology, we always have to think of these two things, that intention and impact. Intention is one thing. You may have very good intention, but did you think about the impact of your action? So give a thought to that too. It is our duty to give a thought to that. What will be the impact of my action? Many times we are not oblivious. We are oblivious of that. Then say, well, I just wanted to help. Oh, you wanted to help. But did you think that your action, will it be helpful or harmful? And why did you not spare a thought that what will be the effect? Hey, suppose a tiger just comes and wants to caress you by love. What will be the impact? The intention of the tiger will be maybe very nice. Okay, I am loving this and hugging. One hug of that tiger will be enough to kill that fellow. So it is not the intention alone. Intentions have to be sanguine. But also we have to see the impact. So Sri Krishna is pointing out that, well, Arjuna, see what impact your inaction will create for others. We shall continue that discussion. The time is almost up. Any questions do you have that you want more clarification, more amplification? Yes, George?
I just had a comment and a minor question, but when chant that we do, you put the English translation after it all.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Otherwise, I didn't know any of that.
Yes, for quite some time we were thinking about that. And we owe to that Srikant, he was insisting on that, that we have to put the English translation. So it is good that so that not only those who do not understand this Hindi or Sanskrit, even for those who understand, it is good to read the, to know the translation.
Right.
Yeah.
There was one sentence there, one statement where it said you can actually get the whole Indian philosophy, you don't need anything else except the Gita.
Oh.
If you understand the Gita in the right way,
yeah.
Forget about all the other scriptures.
Well, that is, of course, true. But that is true with many other scriptures also. Yeah, it is true that if you study one thing properly, then you get the fruit of studying everything. Like Swami Vivekananda said, that if one remembers this statement from the Sermon on the Mount, that blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. He says even all the other scriptures of the world are destroyed. This one sentence, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. That alone will be the beacon light for the world. Yeah, so it is, if you do one thing, that in that sense it is told, that if you study Bhagavad Gita, you will not need to study any other scripture. And even in the other sense also, because Bhagavad Gita has taken into consideration all aspects of our life. It is a very comprehensive study. So from that point of view too, if one properly studies Bhagavad Gita, no other scriptures need to be studied.
Yeah, that's the other thing that it says. Properly study.
Of course, otherwise.
What is the improper way of studying?
Proper way means understanding and implementation. Understand it by becoming Arjuna. It is taught to Arjuna. One has to become a disciple, you know, that then only we understand it. The student, the more or the purified studentship is required. When we become really the student, then the knowledge comes to us. It is the studentship that is most important. That in our Indian science of education, it is told that what education we get is 75% share is that of the student. Himself or herself. 75%. About 5 to 10% comes from the teacher. And another about 10% comes from the surroundings. So, but overwhelmingly 75% comes from the student himself. So, the more is the studentship perfected, the better knowledge comes to us. So, in that sense, the proper study of Bhagavad Gita is by becoming the proper student and remembering that we need to put these teachings into practice. That is the education, understanding and implementation.